Tomlin Tuesdays on Trib Live Radio. Hear the Mike Tomlin press conference on Tuesdays during the regular season at noon.
That Mike Tomlin show, that's a hell of a show. You need to tell it on a weekly basis.
Check it out.
I mean, I hear it's pretty good.
Tuesdays on Trib Live Radio are brought to you by Walnut Capital Real Estate Services, serving your real estate needs in Pittsburgh and surrounding counties with a combined 28 years of experience. Susan Gill and Kevin Doney of Walnut Capital Real Estate Services are here to help, whether you're a property owner, investor, or first-time buyer. Looking to buy, sell, or lease residential or commercial property? Walnut Capital Real Estate Services is just the right fit for you.
Call them at 724-861-0800. That's 724-861-0800 for Walnut Capital Real Estate Services.
Sports Talk on Trib Live Radio. The Mike Tomlin press conference.
You know, we expect to win, but we're not astounded by it. We're capable. So we're a little bit annoyed, to be quite honest.
Trib Total Media. See what's next.
Pressers on Trib Live Radio are brought to you by Walnut Capital Real Estate Services, serving your real estate needs in Pittsburgh and the surrounding counties with a combined 28 years of experience. Call them at 724-861-0800. That's 724-861-0800.
Tomlin time. Steelers made it back to the East Coast about 6 in the morning, I understand. So Mike Tomlin will be irritable and on low sleep, which means it's perfect time for our Tim Benz to ambush him with questions, Josh Taylor, live from the press conference today. Tim has promised to ask him about the clock and how the hell nobody on their sideline could have seen 18 seconds come off the clock between the 3-minute mark and the 2-minute mark in the end of the game.
This is like prime, ripe for the picking for Tim. a tired, disoriented.
Just when you least want Tim to be there, he's there.
Irritable Mike Tomlin.
Yes.
And Tim is just there, just waiting to pick at the bones. This is prime opportunity for him.
Yeah, it really will be good. It's all brought to you by Giovanni's Pizza and Fosta. They bring the noon hour to you here on Trib Live Radio. Congratulations to you, by the way. 3-2 this week. Not quite my 4-1 in pick and pork, but you and I both went Steelers last night and it paid off. And you are now in first place, tied with Jerry DePaula in our pick and pork standings.
I'm going to start a new segment called You, Me, and Jerry D.
That's it.
Old heavy GA. Hitters. GA was a strong 4-1 week.
Yep, GA was 4-1. You and Jerry are 19-9 against the spread, and two games ahead of me, and Guy has fallen out to second place at 18-10.
Yeah, ran into Jerry last night, actually, at the Sports Grill and Cranberry after the Kevin Gorman Monday Night Light show. Jerry was there hanging out. He I didn't realize he lived that close to Cranberry, so he was the area and stopped by, and I see Jerry. I said, what are you doing here? He says, I live out here. So he came and hung out with Kevin afterwards and got to talk to those guys for a little bit. So that was kind of cool to run into Jerry and a non-college football show scene. That was cool.
Well, coming up this week, Josh, the Chargers game turns into now preparation for the Arizona Cardinals and Bruce Arians, and it's going to be a fun week from that standpoint. Cardinals are 4-1. Based on their schedule, like, it's hard to make out how good they are. They've beaten bad teams. They've beaten the Saints, who have one win, the Bears, who have one win, the Niners, who have one win, and the winless Lions. And they've lost to the Rams, who the Steelers beat. So, and that was at home, by the way. So how good are the Cardinals at 4-1? And based on what we saw from Vic, I think Guy was kind of making the point when he joined us, hey, maybe they got a better shot than we think at beating Arizona.
Yeah, I think this is one of those games where Arizona finally gets tested, because we maybe haven't seen a lot from them to suggest that they have been tested. But at the same time, that offense is scoring points. I mean, to score that many points in the NFL, regardless of who you're facing, if you're facing another professional opponent scoring that kind of points, and like Tim pointed out, the point differential, you can't ignore that. A team scoring like that has to get the credit for what they're doing. I mean, even if their defense maybe has had an easy road, their offense is still doing what they're doing, and they did what they did against St. Louis. I mean, they gave St. Louis a good game. So, I mean, and we talked about how good St. Louis's defense was, especially with that front line and the problems that they gave the Steelers, even with Ben Roethlisberger in the game. So you got to tip your hat to what Arizona's doing right now.
They're doing a lot with the running game. They have 10 carries of 15 or more yards this year and 4 25-plus yard carries.
They're finding a rejuvenated Chris Johnson, which is huge for them. I mean, they're kind of dividing the load, but, you know, if Chris Johnson feels even a fraction of what he used to be. He used to be one of the most productive backs in the game just a few years ago. So if they got him back to even something close to that, that's a pretty good weapon to have in your arsenal.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they got a pretty good offensive line. They got Mikey Iupati in there in the offseason. And so we're going to see. Now, the Steelers' D's been pretty good against the run and was last night, but They also were gashed by Justin Forsett on that Thursday night game, too.
And that's one of the things I think Chris Adamski is one that came up with that stat. If you take the game against Forsett out of the equation, the Steelers have actually been pretty dominant against the run. It's just that game that kind of stands out. And Mike Tomlin acknowledged, okay, maybe we took a little bit of emphasis out of it because we wanted to be able to do some things in the passing game, and we were willing to sacrifice some yards against the run. And that's kind of an odd way to look at it, but I guess that's one thing they're willing to do, and that's something that they may not have been able to do in the past or willing to do. Is that okay? We'll take away from this in order to stop this, and in that particular case, it worked for the most part defensively. I mean, it's hard to keep getting stops the way they did against Baltimore, but it worked.
You tell me when Mike Tomlin has begun. I think he
actually just got there.
There you go. Let's join Mike Tomlin here.
It was a gritty performance by the group individually and collectively. It was a good fight. They fought to the finish, obviously, and, you know, it's good to win football games like that. But obviously, also, it was not a perfect game by any stretch. We fell short in a lot of areas, and hopefully we'll have an opportunity to improve in those areas because we got a stiff challenge this week. Some specific things that need to be addressed as we attack our work week this week. The penalties in the kicking game really hurt us from a field position standpoint, and really just unacceptable. It hadn't been us, but it was us on Monday night, and we have to address that. You know, it's tough enough to drive the ball and possess the ball when you don't have your starting quarterback in, but to routinely give yourself the long field through penalties was a detriment to our efforts in the football game. On offense, you know, I really thought the game was unfolding in the manner which we expected. I'd like to see us win a few more possession downs once we cross the 50. I thought we had several drives there where we were able to gain a first down or two at the initial stages, but the drive stalled on what I refer to as the field goal fringe, where we were sending our red zone punt unit out quite a bit. I don't know how many punts we had down inside the 20, but usually that's a reflection of an offense that's stalling around midfield. We got to find ways to win those possession downs around midfield to sustain some of those drives so that we can snap the ball more. I think if we win more of those third downs, we're able to snap the ball more, we'll get a better reflection of what we're hunting there in terms of being able to give the ball to Le'Veon Bell, to D'Angelo Williams and others. You simply need to possess it more. San Diego possessed the ball a lot more than we did in the game, and really from an offensive perspective, our inability to convert those third downs was an element in that. But I did think we took very good care of the ball. You know, there's really no negativity in punting, particularly when you were playing the type of defense that we were playing on Monday night. It enabled us to sustain and stay in the football game. Defensively, obviously, I thought, you know, Phillip cracked the safe, if you will, as the game unfolded, and the stops were tougher to come by. They were able to put together a couple scoring drives in the fourth quarter, and thankfully our offense came alive and matched it. But we waned there some defensively as the game wore on. You know, had some guys stepping up and playing. You know, guys like Robert Golden played a lot. Appreciate those efforts, but in many of those instances, I thought there were better quality snaps out there for us with better preparation. So, you know, if some of those guys will participate moving forward, I look forward to those guys getting a good work week. From a health standpoint, mentioning some of those things, Will Allen has an ankle. That ankle is being evaluated as we speak. He's getting an MRI today. I have more information for him as we move forward. Ross Ventrone has a hamstring. That's also being evaluated as we speak. I have more information on him as we push through the week. Some guys that have missed time who seemingly will be available to us. Ryan Shazier, we expect to be available to us. Cortez Allen will continue to work his way back. No real update on Ben. I hadn't requested one. Really been focused on the guys that are at the brink, guys like Shazier. Or guys that got hurt in-game like Will Allen. We have until 4 o'clock today to activate Martavis. We'll do that. before 4 o'clock today. At this time, I'll talk a little bit about Arizona. You know, they're a 4-1 football team. They got great balance on offense. They're scoring a lot of points, yes, but the manner in which they're going about doing it is impressive and challenging. They're running the ball extremely well with the Johnson guys, CJ and the rookie and David Johnson. And Ellington of late has been a contributor to that running effort as well. They got a highly effective running game. Obviously, with Carson Palmer, their passing game is impressive. He's got 13 touchdowns, I think only 3 interceptions. He's only been sacked 7 times in 5 games. He's got over 1,300 yards passing. He spreads the ball around to a variety of guys. Obviously, his chief target is Larry Fitzgerald, and rightfully so. Larry is a generation guy, man. He's one of the top guys of his generation and has been. He's playing at a high level. Making plays for him all over the field. I really think his efforts in the run game are underrated. Been really impressed with the blocking that he's displayed on this year's tape. Those guys are utilizing him much in the way that we utilized Hines Ward when he was here, and it's really impressive to see Larry embrace the blocking element of the job in the way that Hines did. He's really been impressed. Brown's a talented young receiver that they work to get the ball to. Floyd is another young, talented receiver. Fells at tight end has caught his share of balls. David Johnson, the young rookie runner like I was talking about, appears to have a skill set geared toward the passing game. They utilize him in empty sets quite a bit. They remove him from the backfield. He's a complete route runner. But I really think the strength of their offense is in the balance, the running, the passing, the variety of receivers at Carson's disposal, and the way that he makes good and quick decisions and spreads the ball around to people. Defensively, they're an opportunistic group. They got some guys on the back end with tremendous ball skills. Guys like Johnson, guys like Peterson, guys like the Honey Badger are really doing a great job of getting the football. They're doing a great job of complimenting those guys with a rush. They got a young, talented guy out of Missouri and Golden that's been impressive. Okafor leads them in sacks. They're, you know, with the points that they're scoring, they're playing with the lead, and they're doing the things that good defenses do when they have a lead. They're getting after the quarterback. They're creating turnovers, and they're increasing that lead. Our job, obviously, is to keep pace with them throughout the game. It's going to be a big-time challenge for us. Obviously, we're familiar with those guys. From a schematic standpoint, but they can say the same about us. Don't want to make more out of it than it should be made out of it. You know, this is a small fraternity. It's the National Football League. Just about every other weekend, we got intimate knowledge of someone or their approach to ball or someone's worked with them in the past. You know, we're more concerned about the firepower of this group than that sidebar. They're a 4-1 football team. They're ringing up a lot of points week in and week out. They got an opportunistic defense. They got strong special teams. David Johnson already has 108-yard kickoff return. You know what type of punt returner Patrick Peterson is. We got to work to minimize his impact on the game. If we're as highly penalized in the kicking game as we were a week ago, man, we're going to have problems in that area in a big way. So, you know, we're just at the early stages of development of a plan of our work week, you know, the challenge is clear, and it's a good challenge, one that I'm sure the guys will be excited about meeting. We'll roll our sleeves up and get in the process that is preparation. I'll be happy to address any questions you might have.
Mike, you're obviously made aware of the 18-second runoff after the touchback. In terms of your sideline, who's responsible for paying attention to the clock in that situation?
You know, we got a lot of things going on just in terms of managing our responsibilities. We proceed with the assumption that the clock is going to be managed properly. And, you know, I'm not going to comment too much on that. I know that the league is going to have a statement regarding that, or at least I assume that they're going to have a statement regarding that. You know, it didn't define the outcome of the game, so I'm moving on with my work week.
A mistake on your sideline, but will there be something that you will do going forward knowing that that might happen again?
You know, we're not going to run around chasing ghosts and working at doing other people's jobs. There's a myriad of jobs that go on in the stadium to make a game go. And we're going to assume that people are going to be competent and do their job. I'm not going to check to make sure concessions need help in concessions. I'm not going to check to make sure that the clock guy's managing the clock. Those are their jobs. Our job is to focus on the management of our plan and our people and play and win the game. And so that's where I'm going to keep my focus.
Mike, on the last play, they called timeout. You guys lined up in the Wildcat. They called timeout. You came right back. Was it the exact same call the second time around?
Yes.
Was there any talk about since we showed them that look?
No.
No talk about that?
No.
And if Vic is left uncovered there, what happens?
We run the play.
So there's no chance that Bell throws to Vic if he's uncovered?
No.
Mike, how much of the fact that you have Le'Veon Bell factor in your decision, not necessarily to go for it, but the play you ran, other than this is 2 weeks ago and he's not available, does that alter your thinking there?
You know, we know what Le'Veon's capable of. You guys watch him week in and week out like we do. We got a great deal of confidence in his abilities. And, you know, there was no hesitation. He was our team MVP a year ago. He's getting into form here in 2015. He was a significant contributor to that point in the game and our efforts offensively. We're going to give him the ball.
If he stopped there, Mike, do you go for it again on fourth down? He's still the second left.
We'll never know, will we?
The Castro, Nix, and Heath all made plays on that final play. Can you speak to the Castro, the confidence you have in him to get a long way, not get caught up in the wash?
You know, he's a very talented guard and puller and does a lot of things well. But it's not like he just acquired that skill set. You know, we were very attracted to that element of his game when we looked at him in the draft. He pulled more for Stanford than he does for us, and he pulls a lot for us. That was a big part of his game and their game in college, and so he's just continuing to display the skill set that he's probably displayed for the greater part of his football life.
Mike, did the end of the Baltimore game at all play into your approach to being as hell-bent as you were to get Le'Veon the ball in that situation?
No, I got Le'Veon the ball at the end of the Baltimore game. He just got tackled in the flat.
Talk about handing it to him on either.
Handed, long handoff, extended handoff pass. I like to get the ball in the hands of our playmakers.
If Heath got hit in the head, how much did that factor into your ability to do what you did because you still had the timeout? You didn't have to burn the timeout.
You know, I knew that the clock wouldn't start until the ball was snapped on the subsequent down. It comes with that penalty, but it's just part of the game.
Mike, I think Brian spent some time in the early warm-up with Ben Roethlisberger operating as a guy who would be injured, would operate. Can you clarify his status a little bit?
No, I can't. But we'll activate him by 4 o'clock today, and then we'll proceed from there.
And you had a lot of people watching Ben when he was throwing. And he came back to home.
I'm sure Ben enjoyed that. I wasn't one of them.
You didn't seek any
I did.
Reports or anything?
I did. I did not, no.
Mike, did you do anything in the fourth quarter to make Vic more comfortable, or is it just a matter of him going out there and slinging it more?
No, I really think, you know, when you talk about veteran quarterbacks, I really just think as the game wears on, they get comfortable with what it is they're looking at. I think that the same could be said for both quarterbacks. I think Philip got comfortable with what he was looking at. I think Mike got comfortable with what he was looking at, and both offenses picked up there in the waning moments of the game.
Mike, John Gruden suggested that maybe look at Landry Jones in the third. Was that ever an option, and why or why not?
But the commentator? I don't take advice from those guys.
Mike, Vic took off a big 24-yard run. Because of your quarterback circumstance and your backup and your thin, has he had any shackles on him? Look, we don't want you running around unless it's absolutely necessary.
No, we're just trying to win football games and whatever that entails. Obviously, he's played quarterback for a long time, and he understands the importance of staying healthy and staying up for the guys that he plays with and our present circumstance with Ben being down. But other than that, not a lot of dialogue has gone on in regards to that. I really just think it's just good, sound football. Take care of yourself and protect the football. It's kind of a base job of a guy that's playing quarterback in his circumstance.
Do you think he gained confidence and relaxed a bit after he hit Wheaton on the bomb?
You know, he appeared to be confident and relaxed throughout the game. You know, the results weren't always what we were looking for, but his communication was clean. He had a calm and sure demeanor throughout, and that's one of the things that made him an attractive option for us when we acquired him.
How do you keep the wildcat unpredictable, or is that only so much of a concern?
You know, we're not worried about predictability. You know, we want to wage a war of attrition in some instances in a football game, and when you remove the guy that hands the ball off and they're able to cover out and defend him the way that you have to, then you got a half a man or a man, if you will, of advantage in the box. And so what if they know you're one-dimensional in terms of you running it? That's enough of an advantage if you believe in what you do, particularly circumstantially, to deliver. So we're not going to get caught up in too much of that. It helped us get out of the stadium. We've utilized it in the past. We'll probably utilize it at some point again in the future. It was effective on Monday night in terms of helping us secure that victory.
Mike, you ran a lot with eight men in the box. Does Mike have the freedom to check those plays, or were you really concentrated on running those plays?
In some instances, he does, just like Ben does. In some instances, he does not, in a similar manner that Ben does not during the course of a football game.
Mike, did you have any issue with Antoine Blake and the ball security on his interception?
It was scary, but nice play by Antoine Blake.
The extra yard, half yard, which you got on Heath getting hit, did you need that to feel secure to go to that play at that point, or would you have gone for it anyway, even where Heath went down?
No, we were committed.
Mike, before you answered any questions last night after the game, I think you mentioned the crowd and how amazing it was. Have you ever seen anything like that? Because Rivers said he had to go to a silent count in his own stadium.
Man, I can think of the instances specifically, and not to, not to minimize that, but boy, it was similar to a Monday night crowd we had in D.C. in 08. It was similar to the Atlanta crowd we had last year. I mean, those crowds stood out as really unique road crowds, and you know, we've got unique support from our fans, and we've come to expect that. We don't take it for granted, but we've come to expect it. But that was unique and an awesome, awesome feeling, an awesome venue to be in.
Can it actually make a difference, fans? I mean, when you're talking about a quarterback having to go to a silent count in his stadium?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They energize us, I'm sure, and it created issues for them that they didn't anticipate dealing with in their home venue.
Mike, although, albeit it be categorized as a chip shot, was there any apprehension in using Boswell at the end, or did it come down to weeping Steelers, you speaking internally, you just wanted to try to win the football game right there?
We were going to play to win, and we weren't going to play not to lose. That's just the approach that we took, and we talked about it openly the night before the game, that we were going to do what we felt was necessary to win the football game from a calculated risk standpoint, whether it was conventional or unconventional. We don't keep secrets in that regard. We don't live in our fears in that regard. And I like the fact that the group embraces that.
Mike, you mentioned last week that you wouldn't judge your pass rush until you saw how it did with just four. Rivers seemed to handle some of the blitzes and hitting the tight ends. Did you get there, rushing with four, especially given their issues on their offensive line?
I thought the rush was very effective throughout the game. And much of it was four. And I can't say enough about the contributions of Cam Haywood and Stephon Tuitt in terms of their ability to push the pocket. It didn't manifest itself in the form of sacks for those guys. But, boy, I thought for the greater part of the night, they created a well that the quarterback had to throw out of. There were several holding calls that were significant in the game. And really it's because of the efforts of those guys in the rush and what they were able to do inside and up front.
Do you like when a team has to pass that much, then Riverside 48 attempts?
I don't have control over their play calling, so I don't spend a lot of time worrying about it. It's our job to stop them, whether they run it or throw it. It was their decision.
Mike, did you get an explanation on why Shamarco's fumble was blown dead?
I did not, no.
Mike Vick said after the game that Ben called that player, drew up that long pass to Wheat. So is that a play that's already in your book, or is that something you guys all drew up in the dirt?
We ran that play, I don't know, two or three times this week, so I don't know what you mean by drawn up. There was a discussion regarding the play, and Ben was a part of that discussion, but we didn't draw it up in the dirt, if that's what you're asking.
Mike, in terms of the playbook, Mike Vick said that he spent a couple extra hours each day this week getting comfortable with everything. Are you at the point now where with Mike versus Ben, you can pretty much open the playbook and use whatever's in there?
Absolutely not. You know, Ben's been here a long time. And not only has he been here a long time, but, you know, in a lot of ways, he's been involved in the development and in the doctoring and the alteration of that book. Mike's just simply learning it. And he's probably 6 or so weeks or 7 or so weeks into that process. So I'm not going to say that that's comparable. I will say that he has enough knowledge and he's comfortable enough to play winning football for us at the quarterback position. And I know he's looking to continue to strengthen that. And I imagine that he's going to work in a similar manner this week as he did a week ago.
Is it more a matter of recognition than it is actually knowing the playbook, per se?
It's knowing. It's, you know, there's different levels of knowing. You know, there's sitting in your seat and being able to articulate it and have a conversation with someone in the meeting room, but there's also being able to stand in that pocket and make those decisions under fire. Obviously, he's up to speed from a classroom standpoint, and obviously he's getting up to speed from an in-game, standing in the pocket standpoint, and that's what the work is about. That's why we come in here every day. That's why he works the manner in which he does on and off the field to increase that learning curve and to get up to speed to make the type of good and quick decisions that's required for him to play winning football for us.
I guess your hope that somewhere in the league's explanation about the clock is an explanation as to why it wasn't put back on when it was realized?
I'm not looking for an explanation. I'm simply moving on. That's just how you got to do it in my business. I'll let you guys do that.
Do you ever feel as if you're sticking your neck out when you make a decision or a call?
Yeah, but that, you know, that comes with the territory. You know, I tell our guys all the time, everybody's got a little something ugly about their job. You know, the little guys got to get in some uncomfortable piles from time to time and mix it up with the big guys. The big guys like Cam Haywood and Tuitt got to chase little people all day, and we're not rotating them. And conditioning is a factor, and I got some decisions to make. Together we eat or not. And I think if we all embrace the difficulties of our positions, it gives us a better chance to be collectively successful.
I imagine you're not too concerned about criticism over decisions, but is it internal reaction that would get your attention?
I'm just trying to win football games. I just don't live in fear. I don't worry about those things. I can't. I can't waste time worrying about that. I got to do what I feel is appropriate. And some of it, and most of it, is gut-oriented, not only in terms of the men that we work with, but what's transpired in that stadium to get us to that point.
Is there anything in those drives that stalled out in the field goal fringe you were talking about that stood out to you? You didn't execute in those spots.
You know, in many instances, not taking anything away from those guys, it wasn't about what they were doing. It's about what we were not doing. You know, just a play here, a play there. Inaccurate throw here, a drop there, a miscommunication or a misunderstanding between people. But oftentimes that is the case. I don't want to paint with a broad brush or make it seem like that's anything unique, because it's not. When you fail, that usually is the case. And that was the case for us on Monday night.
How do you evaluate Vince Williams' performance in place of Shazier?
Vince and Sean Spence have done an above the line job, but you know, we expect those guys to. Those guys are not rookies. Those guys are experienced, the backup players as you're going to come across, and we got a great deal of confidence in them.
Mike, was not living in your fears something of an acquired taste in your coaching career? Did that take some getting used to?
I've always kind of been that guy. Ask my mom; she'll tell you. You know, I don't know. I just, you know, you got to have the courage of your convictions. You know, you can miss a lot of life, man, just, you know, hesitating or not taking calculated risks associated with chasing greatness or living out your dreams. And I've just always been one to try to do that. I've always been one to try to encourage those around me to do that.
Not that it's the reason that you made the call, but do those kinds of decisions translate to the players under you and who want to go for it and reinforces the kind of attitude you want them to have?
I think it goes both ways. I think that, you know, I gain strength from them. Hopefully they gain strength from me. I think we do get our vibes off of one another. I think that's just part of team, regardless of your role within teams, whether you're a gunner or a head coach or what have you. I think that at times we all gain strength from one another, and rightfully so.
Since having had a week with Chris Boswell now and him hitting that 47-yarder of kind of what the outside of his range is at this point?
No, it looked pretty good the other night, though, didn't it? We'll go day by day with that. Chris did a nice job, not only in the field goal game, but in the kickoff game. We'll just keep growing with him day by day. I like the way he's working.
What have you thought about Dree's performance and evolving over the course of the season?
I think his arrow's been pointed up. I think that he's been doing some things mechanically well. I think he's been aggressive. I think we've had a little daylight. We hadn't had the big one yet, but I'm confident in the direction we're moving with our kickoff return group.
It's generally, you know, before they changed the kickoff rules, if you were 8 yards deep in the end zone, nobody ever took that out. Now, regularly guys take that out. Does he have a green light to do that as he sees fit?
It just depends on the circumstance. We make those decisions not only week to week, but within game based on circumstance.
Mike, it's an easy question to ask. I don't have guys coming at me 100 miles an hour, but why is it so hard to avoid blocking in the back, blocking a guy's numbers?
I don't know. You tell me, man. You know, we're going to get to the bottom of it, or we're going to do it with new people.
Anything for Coach? All right, Coach.
Thank you, guys.
The press conference for October 13th, 2015. The 3-2 Pittsburgh Steelers getting ready for the 4-1 Arizona Cardinals at Heinz Field. 1 o'clock this Sunday, Tom Brenneman will be on the call with Troy Aikman. And much to get to there with the Tomlin reaction. We'll get Tim Benz on the line here immediately. Josh Taylor along. I'm Ken Laird. And Josh, as you dial up Tim there on the line, I'll just go over a couple of things I thought were the most interesting. His line of the day, of course, was he's not going to be spending time chasing goats and worrying about whether the concession guys are selling concessions. In terms of the clock, 18-second malfunction at the end of the game there, but I'm not sure that's going to satisfy Tim and some of our emailers in terms of taking acceptance for missing that on the sideline. I mean, in a way, he's right. You do count on the NFL that they've got to do their job. But on the other hand, your job as a coach is to be aware of those things and to be sharp enough to point them out so you can correct things that the mistakes that happen. I mean, mistakes have happened in pro sports for a long time. And there have been a lot of coaches, had they not pointed it out, wouldn't have gotten the corrections, which would have led to wins. So he was still very dismissive of that, as we get Tim on the line here now, live from the South Side over at the Steelers facility. Tim, were you satisfied? Were you surprised that Tomlin didn't back down from his, I don't really care what, actually we're going to get Tim on in like 5 minutes. Sorry about that. I thought we had Tim on the line now. So we'll call him back here in about five. What about you, Josh? I mean, were you surprised at all there that Tomlin didn't go into a deeper explanation of the clock management and mismanagement and rip somebody from his own staff and, hey, we got to be sharper than that and we got to be aware of what the clock is? And
he's not going to do that because of that memo they sent out. You're not going to talk about mistakes that were made during the game and calls that were made. He's not going to do it. And I don't understand why people expect him to. It's been what,
no,
a couple weeks
now? I'm talking about the league guys.
We're talking about his own guys. That doesn't shock me either, because he's not going to throw his own guys under the bus. And I know some people that are surprised. They don't pay a guy to watch the clock? Actually, no. They don't pay a guy to watch the clock. Believe it or not, there aren't just like 8,000 people standing on NFL sidelines doing menial tasks. There's maybe about a dozen
should?
Of them.
You don't
them.
Think they should have somebody double-checking?
I'm not saying that there shouldn't be. But believe it or not, there's not a guy that's paid like $7.50 an hour to just sit there and make sure the clock is running. That's not how this works.
Well, they do have a guy that advises in terms of reviews and replays, right? I mean, just the same as Clint Hurdle looks through his dugout and says, now, hey, tell me whether I should review this or not.
Now, that's a different story, because the one thing that, and this is something that I think people who watch the game on a monitor as opposed to watching the game from the sideline or inside the stadium, don't realize that they have an advantage. You have the clock sitting there in the corner the entire time you're watching the game on a television monitor. You don't have that luxury when you're standing in the stadium. So for someone to just assume that there's somebody with their eye on the clock all the time, thinking that they're just going to be able to pick that up immediately. And Tomlin pointed out something interesting because he said he's not going to sit there and make sure the concession people are doing their jobs, because the reason why you have a clock person, the reason why someone is there to do that, is to make sure the coach doesn't have to worry about that. In theory, he should not have to worry about making sure the clock is stopped after a touchback. He shouldn't have to worry about that in theory, because somebody's getting paid already by the league to do that. So in a way, yeah, I can understand where he's coming from in that regard. At the same time, yeah, that's where your replay person, or your person that kind of, I guess, you, I don't know if you want to call it quality control or whatever, that's probably where they come into play. Because if you have somebody that's advising you, hey, you should replay this, that same person should probably say, hey, we lost some time here on the clock and maybe they missed something. So maybe that falls on that person. But for somebody to suggest they don't have a person standing on the sideline watching the clock, no, they don't. There's bigger things to do on NFL sidelines, just sit there and make sure the clock is running. So, no, they don't have that person.
Well, I think that's a mistake. I don't think it's that menial of a thing where you should say, hey, we got bigger stuff to worry about. That's
but
pretty big 18 seconds
but,
at the end of the game.
But how somebody often is somebody going to sit there and use an entire 3 hours of their life just staring at the game clock?
Well, they don't have to do just the clock, but everything. You know,
but,
just somebody
but that's what people expect. Well, there's someone there not watching the clock. No, there's not someone devoting 3.5 hours of their life just staring at the game clock. No, there's not that person. But I understand where you're coming from. It's just, it's not you as much as it is people asking stupid questions.
Here's the league statement. The league did come out with a statement which acknowledged that the side judge should have caught this mistake by the clock operator, and it reads, because of an error by the clock operator, the game clock was incorrectly started before the Steelers' first play from scrimmage following the touchback. The first down snap came with 2:38 left to play instead of 2:56, a difference of 18 seconds. The official game time is kept on the stadium scoreboard, but it is the responsibility of the side judge to supervise the timing of the game. Had the side judge or any other of the six on-field officials noticed the timing error, they would have corrected it. And they don't mention the side judge by name, but according to Pro Football Talk, it is Rob Vernacci. So I'm sure some people would have wondered if it was Sarah Thomas, you know, who was the first female ref who was operating the game, but it was not Sarah.
She was the line judge, wasn't she, Sarah Thomas?
She was the line judge, yeah. So this is Rob Vernacci, the side judge who didn't notice the mistake. It's his job. He blew it. Officiating has been bad in the league for as long as we all can remember, it appears, but, you know, specifically last Monday with the missed batted ball, which could have changed the outcome of a game. This one's not as egregious. I think Tomlin's right. It didn't really matter that much in terms of, you know, the plays that were run. I don't know if you agree, Josh. Like, they ran two plays to Le'Veon. They probably would have run the same two plays if they had 18 seconds or not.
They would have run the same two plays. The only difference would have been if he would have fallen short on that last play, they would have had more time to call a timeout and kick the field goal. That would have been the difference, and it ended up not mattering. I don't even have a problem with the way that he approached it, saying it didn't have a bearing on the outcome of the game. And he's right, because it didn't. So for people to get mad at that, I really think some people look at stuff just to pick at when it comes to Mike Tomlin because they have nothing better to do or they want some reason not to like him. But regardless of how you feel about it, he's right. That 18 seconds had no bearing on the outcome of the game because they still won it. We can poke at it and peel the lid off and prod it as much as we want to. But at the end of the day, he's still right. They still won and the 18 seconds didn't matter.
Now, the whining from New England about if this had happened in New England, people would have been saying they were the home team. And everything is about them.
Well, two questions. One, why do they care about this game in the second and the time on the clock? Two, why do they think we care about what they think? We don't care. You weren't playing. Your team's game is already done. You whooped Dallas. Go be on the Cincinnati. Go deal with the next game. Stop complaining about stuff that didn't happen in the game you didn't play in. We don't give a damn what you think about what would have happened if your team was playing. We don't care. That's the problem. Patriots fans think we care about them. We don't. We don't care about your team.
They do have a point here that Tomlin was so upset, and you can get Tim on the line here if you want. Josh, I think he's ready to go. But they have a point to me in the sense that Tomlin whined. I don't want to say he whined. He did whine. It was whining. He brought it up anyway. He was asked about it the headset.
It's not whining if you're asked about it. If you asked, and if he doesn't ask the question, well, they asked him about it. He didn't answer the question. Well, he can't win either way. I'm saying
well, in this case, he was asked about it, and he said, it doesn't matter.
And he tried to play it off as best as he could. When they kept prodding him, he answered the question. So what are you supposed to say, no, and just ignore it? He can't win either way.
But it was different behavior from Tomlin. So if I'm a New England fan, I can see that a little bit, you know. But then again, the Patriots have reason for us all to question whether there was nefarious behavior because of Spygate, and that's been, you know, that's indisputable. They accepted that they did bend the rules in that case and paid the price for it, whereas the Chargers, we don't have that. In this case, it's an officiating thing, not a, like the headsets are under home Patriots control, whereas these clocks, you assume, you're hoping for the sanctity of the league, are operated by neutral parties, whoever the clock operator is, and for God's sakes, the side judge, we hope, is a neutral party. We got Tim live from the south side right now as he checks in.
We're going after you too.
No. But I mean, they're all over it, so it's impossible not to ignore this.
It's unbelievable. These freaking people will make anything about themselves. They're the most self-absorbed fan base I've ever come across in my life.
I just said the same thing.
You know, first of all, what Tomlin said today was no different at all than what he said after the headsets. He said the league did an investigation and we're okay with it. This time he's saying, I don't even need an investigation. I asked him about that. So what more do they want? Furthermore, if Tomlin had complained about the clock, they would have said, well, there he goes, complaining again. It's a no-win situation. They've just set it up to make themselves look good by making Tomlin look bad. I can't stand that fan base. It's the worst.
Now, does Tomlin look bad, though? To not care more than he does about the clocks in the 18 seconds and not having somebody who was chasing ghosts on the sideline, to use his words?
Yeah, that was a ridiculous explanation. I think he looks bad to Steeler fans, Ken. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
I think you deserve
a
better explanation than that. I thought that was pretty weak sauce myself. When he says, we got lots of stuff to worry about, nothing more important than 18 seconds in a game that came down to one, you don't. We got more important stuff to worry about. What's he talking about? From a Steeler fan point of view, I don't like the explanation. I was just going off on Patriot fans who, as usual, try to make every league issue about themselves because they have such a persecution complex.
Well, the end of the game went Tomlin's way. If it did not, he'd be getting crushed today, right? I mean, as we discussed for the first couple hours of the show, but he didn't quite back off that either. He played up the I'm playing to win, and God, he even referenced his mother. Ask my mom. She'll tell you how aggressive I've
been. The most introspective we've ever heard, Mike Tomlin. My God, for these first, what's it been now, 8 years of his reign as Steelers head coach, I didn't even know he had a mom. I thought he was constructed in a football lab. I thought he was hatched. You know, for him to reference something as personal passively as that is newsworthy to me.
It is, and, you know, it was almost like he was writing a self-help book there. You know, I've told a lot of people, you know, you can miss a lot of the world, but I don't know whatever he went into there about chasing greatness, but
it was almost like Ferris
Bueller. Borderline Cower. You get that from Cower quite a bit, but you rarely get it from Tomlin. That was as interesting to me as anything. Well, that and the fact that he was so obvious with the he's beyond rolling his eyes now at the Ben stuff. When he was asked about Ben warming up, that was a great answer he gave when he said, yeah, I'm sure Ben liked that everybody noticed him. Did it get any more perfect than that?
Now, that was about throwing passes before the game, right, Tim? I didn't even see that.
Right, exactly. That's what he was referencing.
Now, there was also the question about the play call for the touchdown to Marcus Wheaton. What was your take on that and his answer to that question?
The play call to Marcus Wheaton? And that's why he laughed about that, too. What did he say? They tried that two other times during the week, did he say, or two other times during the game? Remind me.
I think he said during the week.
During the week. Yeah, okay. So I think that he's right in hinting that Ben would like the imagery to be that he called Michael and Tom over and, you know, drew it on his chest like it was a flag football game at McGee Field. Or, you know, got down and, okay, Michael, you're the rock, and Marcus, you're this little yellow pebble here, and what I want you to do is, I mean, that's how Ben would like it to manifest in everybody's head, but I think Tom was trying to say, yeah, it's a play. We've practiced it before.
They all have to roll their eyes about some of that stuff over there. at the same time, they've got to appreciate what he is compared to Michael Vick. He was asked about Vick's restrictions, and on one hand, he said he's got the ability to check out of plays, Tim, which I didn't see any of. He then did acknowledge, though, that he does not have the full playbook at his disposal.
Right. Absolutely not, is I believe how he phrased it. And that also was candid. Like, no way we're giving this guy everything. And, you know, assimilating the whole playbook, still an issue for him. I think the question was asked, and the phraseology was, is he shackled at all when it comes to running? I don't think that they want him running very often because, as Tomlin pointed out, despite what the commentator, John Gruden, said, he was not going to go to Landry Jones. So they don't have to go to Landry, which means they don't want to see Michael getting hurt and running around too much. Now, I couldn't have been the only one who thought it was fun that his former boss, John Gruden, was simply referred to as the commentator.
Yeah, what was the look on Mike's face when he said that? Was he joking or was he actually putting a dig in there?
Smilingly dismissive. Because the question came from the back of the room. At one point, Mike, Gruden said that you might be considering going to Jones. Is that true? At any point did you consider going to Landry? And Mike said, the commentator? And just kind of raised his eyebrows and smiled. The commentator. So anytime we bring up something about Coward Hours, he's just going to be referenced as the commentator as well?
Good question. I don't know if that what kind of relationship he and Gruden have at all, but that was pretty funny. You asked him about Baltimore and the Le'Veon Bell usage. It was a great question. He was not happy about it, as we expected.
Thank you. That's what I was charged to do, so I did my part.
It was a good question, though, wasn't it?
Because other people just happened to ask him first. I was trying.
Yeah, you did, but wasn't that a good question? Because he defended himself by saying, we did give it to Le'Veon, but in the past game, I'm not buying it.
No, neither am I. I think that he realized the error of his ways, and they wanted to make sure that wasn't the case this time, because as you heard him say, if they had managed to get an extra play because there was 1 second left on the clock, somebody else pointed that out too. That wasn't just a figment of my imagination or my eyes fooling me on the ESPN.com replay, that they would have run it again, that they were not going to kick the field goal even if they had a second left and they had burned the timeout. So if it had been reviewed, it had been deemed to go against the Steelers, they had to burn the timeout, they would have gone for it again anyway, and I bet you that would have been Le'Veon Bell, too.
Tim Benz live from the South Side here in the Giovanni's Pizza Hour of Trib Live Radio, the Mike Tomlin press conference. We're all brought to you by Duffy's Beer on 294 Curry Hollow Road, 412-653-BEER, and their weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. The questions about Martavis Bryant were pretty short. He was very dismissive of that. Did you hear any scuttlebutt over there as to why they didn't dress Martavis in this game?
No, I did not hear any scuttlebutt to that effect. But he did say that he will be activated by 4 p.m. today, and that was it. I wonder if there – now he's such an introspective guy all of a sudden. Maybe if there was something beyond just injury that kept Martavis on the bench, if he's regretting that. Because I think as much of the reason of them not wanting to go deep with Vic is that they didn't want to go deep without Martavis a lot. You know what I mean? So with him being out, I wonder if they felt pinched by their own decision there to not play him, if that was something beyond just injury, as we pontificated yesterday.
Right. He was a hard ass in regards to special teams penalties. Will he follow through with those tough words?
Who are you going to bench? Seriously, who are you going to bench for someone else right now? They're so thin depth-wise. I mean, what next Ross Cockrell are they going to find in an effort to bench and cut someone else? He's just pissed off about it, and rightfully so, because it got in the way. As we said, four special teams penalties in the span of the first 20 minutes. So given that, he's got every right to be upset. But I don't know. When he says we're going to have to do it with different people, I mean, who? Who gets benched? Who gets activated that's going to make them better at this point?
Yeah, I don't know. Jordan or Rodney Dangerfield, a.k.a. Jordan Dangerfield, I mean, who knows?
Plus, one of the guys, did Ventrone get a penalty last night? I don't remember. Was he one of the guys that got a penalty? He may have been, because he's got a hammy now, so maybe he has to be out anyway. Will Allen has to be out anyway. So, you know, what other special teams-type players are you going to dress that you haven't been dressing in the first place? So I think that's just a bit of a hollow message.
Yeah, Jordan Todman at the block in the back, which was the worst of them, I thought. But
cut Jordan Todman. Oh, no.
Maybe Antoine Blake had another one. I'm not sure. Anyway, a couple other things. There were some Tomlin-isms that filled the presser today, Tim. We were exposed to field goal fringe as a new red zone.
Yes. I think that's all a phrase that we use, but we kind of use it more in the exploratory? Not exploratory. What form do I mean? Help me with my eighth grade grammar here. We're on the fringe of, you know, more of a descriptive as opposed to it being a noun. But Tomlin has now made it a noun, made it a proper noun. So good for him. I mean, this is the Tomlin dictionary expanding.
He called, the possession downs on the field goal fringe and then went into...
Possession downs, yes, as opposed to non-possession downs. I like that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And I wonder what would happen if I phrased the question to Mike. Mike, on your non-possession downs, ... how would that go over?
He'd probably answer that question in full detail, too. That's the weird part.
That situation with football, Tim.
I would love to know what a non-possession down is. I'm dying to find that one out.
When the ball's in the air, Tim, and it's a non-possession down, it's situational football. Larry Fitzgerald is a generation guy. I like that one.
Yeah, we've gone from generational player now to making that even more colloquial. So, yes, we are on to generation guy. What, yellow jacket guy didn't last very long, gold jacket guy, whatever you used to call Hall of Famers, that's dead now. We have to improve upon it.
Yeah, and we'll see some of Larry this week, of course. And I wonder, he did say Cortez Allen might be possibly healthy. Of course, that's every week. But Shazier, it sounds like pretty good news, right, that he'll be back.
Yes, it does sound like he should return. And Shazier, if you believed him before the game, was actually ready to go this week, too. I don't know who I believe on that front, but that's what Shazier said.
That and the living in your fears, Tomlinisms, I guess that pretty much wrapped it up. What else did we... miss of note, Chris Boswell did a good job.
I did like rush. The we'll never know now after what would have happened if he had another second to go. But, I mean, I think he said that, but then as the press conference went along, he stated that they would have ended up going for it anyway, right?
Yeah.
Oh, the other thing that you charged me to ask that I did follow through on, so give me credit here. I did ask about the Heath Miller sequence. You wanted to know about that too, right?
Yeah, what was his answer there? I forget now.
Well, I asked him about the did you need the extra yardage and the blow to the head of Heath stopping the clock and preventing you from having to use your timeout? Did that factor in your decision-making? And the way he eventually answered it was no, because he said that they were going to go for it regardless, that they were going to have Heath. Sorry, some idiot is trying to back up into me going down a one-way street here, and he almost just hit me. So we almost had a confrontation on the phone, which would have been fun for everybody. But I just had a Jim Colony moment on you there, Ken. I'm sorry. Well, actually, what was going on in the car affect my discussion on the air. I shouldn't ever do that. I apologize.
That's fine.
You have to do this with different people next week, I suppose. No, but the Heath Miller thing that was interesting to me was he decided that after Heath got hit, it didn't matter if you got the extra yardage to the half-yard line before he wanted to go for it. He didn't need to have that ball spotted on the half-yard line, which he thought might have been the case before we heard from the press conference today.
Right. All right, so Tomlin's playing the hero role today, and it worked out for him, so I suppose he deserves to strut a little bit. It's a big win for them and a big game this week against the Cardinals, and we'll talk more about them as the week goes on, Tim, but...
Bruce Arians questions today. The game was so dynamic last night that there was no discussion about Arians coming back or any of that drama that took place. He was spared all those questions, and I kept feeling like he was waiting for one, and then something else would come up about the game, and then I'd forget to ask. So I think maybe that'll come up as the week goes along.
Yeah, he just talked about, in general, familiarity between the two sides. Well, that was the other thing. He did credit Phil Rivers for cracking the safe or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that was kind of interesting. You're right about that. That went unchecked because of all the clock and X's and O's stuff. But when you say that Phillip Rivers cracked the safe, well, that's a bit concerning, right?
Yep.
You don't
yep.
want your safe cracked at this point in the season.
Yeah, and
especially
you would think
the defense seems to be working, you know?
If they crack your safe in-game, then it's up to the coordinator to change the combination.
Correct, and that, I guess, didn't happen as the game continued.
then again, Antonio Gates is juiced out of his mind that he can pretty much break any safe at this point.
Well, he just picks it up and opens it with his own bare hands.
Yeah, exactly.
Mongo hates safes.
All right, good work, Tim. We will chat tomorrow on Jagoff of the Week Wednesday.
Oh, wait, the other one. Wasn't there another one that we were supposed to get to? Did I drop the ball on this? Oh, the follow-up about the clock. Like,
yeah,
when he says,
clock.
I don't need an explanation. As you and I talked about, isn't the biggest thing, if you realized a mistake was made and the clock was running, why didn't somebody from upstairs stop and buzz down to the refs and say, stop the game, we have an error here? Isn't that the most alarming part to you, that they just let it go? Because it is to me.
Well, that's alarming, and you know, the NFL statement that came out just a little bit ago said it was the field judge that was responsible for monitoring that. But there, I would imagine there's got to be a league employee in the booth that's also responsible,
right?
Like you said,
exactly.
So,
I'm baffled that they even put out which ref it was that was responsible.
Yeah, they didn't actually. That was Pro Football Talk went and said,
oh, okay.
Found out who the side judge was. They said it was the side judge, so I guess.
Oh, the side judge. So is it the lady ref then, and they don't want to have a crap storm swirl around her?
No,
not
she
according
was the line
to,
judge.
Yeah, according to it was somebody else. It was some guy, Rob, somebody or other.
Okay, all right.
So, fire Goodell every Monday. Officiating disaster just leads to
that'll do.
Fire the commish. All right, Tim, see you back here tomorrow.
Just make sure it happens in New England so everything is taken
right.
care of there and all the corners are tucked in.
We don't want any drama up in New England.
Oh, God. All right. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
All right, see you later. Tim Benz over on the south side with his due diligence. Good stuff from Tim. I like throwing our man on the scene over there so we can do the dirty work. Coming up top of the hour, we got baseball discussion. That's maybe a breath of fresh air. So much Steeler talk on the day after a game. And still a lot to get to in the Pirates' fallout, Josh. And there are two big baseball games today. The Cubs going for the win over the Cardinals at Wrigley Field in Game 4. 4:30 today, Lackey v. Hamill.
Mm-hmm.
And Dodgers-Mets, I didn't watch any of, but sounded like a zoo last night.
Mets went crazy, man. Was it 13 runs they scored? Mets went off.
13-7, something like that?
If it ends up being Cubs and Mets, it might be a better series than we think if this keeps up the way it's going. I wouldn't have expected it, especially not from the Mets the way they're hitting right now against the Dodgers pitching staff. But the Mets
well,
are showing
the pitching
better than
matchups,
I expected.
Kershaw today with the Dodgers needing to extend, and Lackey versus Hamill's advantage St. Louis, I would think.
Yeah, I imagine St. Louis and L.A. wins today. But, I mean, then again, this is Kershaw. He's had his struggles in the past. So if you saw his first outing, it gives you reason for pause a little bit.
All right, we appreciate all the emails today on the day after a big Steelers win to go to 3-2. Pirates answers coming from Beer Temple, Sawchick, and West. They had good stuff with us late last week, but I'm sure even more intel as the week's gone on, so don't miss it. The final Bucco Roundtable of the season. The Pirates Roundtable, Tuesdays from 1 to 2, with our three big Pirates writers in studio here. It's the Rec Table, according to Rob Beer Temple. The Rec Table's next.